Yeah. Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
SRT Crew.
Whoa.
SRT. They got that realness flowing in they DNA. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to SRT today. H.O. got that payload when he say so. What you betting on? Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron. I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll type forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT. Behind the glass, that G-Money. They with a strong, I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? It's Sports Roundtable, live from the SRT Studios, overlooking Atlantic Station. And it is another banger with the SRT crew. Thanks for tuning in. Sports Roundtable is in the building each and every Wednesday, 7 to 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Shout out to my main man, the king of confetti. Shout out to the Georgia Bulldogs for making a valid effort. Got a lot to cover for you tonight. I am your humble host, H.O. from Bankhead. My main man, sports superhero, Hancock is in the building.
What's good?
And of course, all the way from the Gump, we running them T-shirts, baby. Real talk tees.
Yes, sir.
Champa Confetti, D-Wheel the coach is in the building.
What's happening?
And of course, the man who makes it all possible, dropping them beats behind the glass, G-Money.
Yo.
Sports Roundtable is in the building once again. Give us a call, 404-603-8770. Join us live on Facebook, SRT Sports Talk Radio. Just go to that link, search it on Facebook. And you can join us in studio. We all here.
What up?
You can see the whole crew in studio if you just do what I said. And we're actually in the building doing our thing. So we got a lot to talk about. Championship game, hot news, Falcon report is coming up. We got some other news, some other talk about some coaches being fired and things of that nature. Got to break down the NFL playoff weekend, and we're going to review what happened this past weekend as well. So hang on in there with us. You got 2 hours, and thanks for giving us 2 hours to entertain you, because this is what we do. So with that being said, before we do that, Bo Bell, dear friend of the show, asked me to do him a dear favor and let all of us go to NBA.com and vote Lou Williams to the All-Star game. He's having a magnificent year. So let's get Atlanta's own Lou Williams into this All-Star game, man. So make sure you go to NBA.com and vote Lou Williams. Can we just do that? The tenets of the SRT. Now, with that being said, G, let's go ahead and crank up some of this hot news.
Blazing, hot, 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 scorching, red hot.
This is why I'm hot.
It's the Sports Roundtable Hot News.
Hot News sponsored by the Big Easy Grill. If you're looking for the best New Orleans seafood in town, please go on over to our friends at the Big Easy Grill at 1193 Collier Road, Atlanta, Georgia. The best shrimp in town. It is verified, the best po' boy in town. That's verified as well. Crab claws, the whole menu is banging. Just go to BigEasyGrill.com and check out the menu. Han, first question in the hot news. I just had a blank there. The championship game between Georgia and Bama was
a great game. Let's say a great game. How about that?
Okay.
First of all, I do want to congratulate my compadre. Bama again has, I guess, flexed their muscles and let everybody know that they are the kings of college football. So hats off to him for that, and we want to give him his props off the bat.
Absolutely.
Good enough. All right, as far as the game had momentum swings. It had missed opportunities. It had some bad officiating. It had, I guess, to me, the biggest coaching decision I've seen happen in game in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
For Nick Saban to take a guy who was 25-2, if I'm right,
mm-hmm. over 26-2 now,
26-2,
because they gave him the win.
But before the pulling of him, or before the replacement, 25-2 had led you to two national championship games.
Mm-hmm.
To have the cojones to pull him because the team needed a spark, and then to have enough wherewithal to stay with him after the first series didn't go well.
Right.
See, that was the big thing that I saw, because I was like, well, this really didn't work. So he gave him two series. The second series worked out for him. So in a nutshell, what I was wondering and what I was waiting to hear was going to be the national narrative of boring game. SEC, not entertaining. We didn't watch. But the game lived up to, I guess, it exceeded to me.
Right.
Because I think in our region or in this part of the United States, it was a big game. Maybe not nationally because of the regional bias. But to me, it was an exciting game, great game, very entertaining, and it had a lot of drama. And like I said, the momentum swings is really what got it. It had some, almost one kid having goat horns, probably would have had to take online class the rest of his career.
Right.
Wouldn't have been able to get back to Tuscaloosa. But in a nutshell, it was a great game. I really enjoyed it, and you know, I think it'll go down in history as one of the better national championship football games, to be honest. And the other thing is, and this is the last thing I'm gonna say about it, I guess it shows you the value of the recruiting and of having the depth. Because being honest, Bama losing all the linebackers throughout the year and still having the wherewithal to get to this game with replacement players almost everywhere. And then in the national championship game, to basically have six freshmen on the field on the last drive, if I'm not mistaken, and win the game with freshmen, that's pretty big. So the recruiting, they can play it down a lot. You know, a lot of people say, oh, they don't know what they're going to be. But apparently Nick knows what he's doing, because he's getting players that were going to their prom last year, and they contributed this year
right.
to winning the national championship.
Exactly.
It's big.
Now, before we move to the second question, you and I was watching the game. We was on the phone. And then I text you, or I may even say to you, I think Nick is going to make a change. If they're going to get back into this game, he's going to have to make a change.
Right.
And you said, you really think so?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
I didn't think he had to.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Good.
I asked the question on Twitter after
we
had
talked.
I put it on Twitter. Do you go to the bullpen? Is it Tua time?
Yeah.
But honestly, I was half-heartedly joking.
Right.
But to see him come out, I was actually shocked.
Yeah. Looking like Steve Young when he dropped back. All right, question number two. D. Will.
Yes, sir.
Everybody wants to know this. Who will be the starting quarterback at Alabama next year?
To be honest, that is right now the million-dollar question. Well, how much Nick make? $8 million question. Okay, because we saw as been stated, and as we all saw Monday night, Tua Tagovailoa, the true freshman quarterback from Hawaii, came in the second half and did exactly what everybody has been clamoring for Jalen Hurts to do since he took over the position at the beginning of last year in the first game of the season. So, let's be honest. By word alone, it will be an open competition, okay? That means, and they're saying that so Jalen doesn't walk out the door this summer, okay? So, it's going to be an open competition, because we got to be honest, Jalen deserves a right to fight for his position. He's earned that right. But in a Brian Daboll system, who is now the offensive coordinator at Alabama, who came from the New England Patriots, who for the last who knows how many years has called plays for Tom Brady. He runs a pro-style offense. And we saw Jalen thrive last year in a Lane Kiffin offense, and Lane Kiffin runs a version of the spread offense.
Right.
So we saw him thrive in that type of offense. And at times this year, the reason we saw Jalen struggle so much is because he was playing in a pro-style offense, an offense that doesn't fit his skill set as much. And you saw in the second half, the playbook opened wide open. You saw plays that we hadn't seen all year when Tua Tagovailoa got in the game. Brian Daboll's, he became who he was. Instead of him calling plays for his signal caller, he started calling plays that he was comfortable with calling because the person that he was calling them for was able to make the plays. So, like I said, he needed Brian Daboll for his offense to be successful. He needs a TB12, a Tom Brady type of quarterback back there who can make all the throws, make all the reads. And let's not get it twisted. Tagovailoa is athletic. You've seen that a couple of times. If you go back earlier in the season, that Vanderbilt game where he made a Houdini play and found a receiver in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, he did the same thing Monday night where he broke a lot of tackles and was able to escape. And so he does a lot of the same things that Jalen's able to do. But what he does great is being able to throw the football. And in my opinion, next year and for years to come, it's going to be Tua Tagovailoa's job to lose.
Let me ask you that, because I wrote down here when you said about Daboll's offense and you hadn't seen the explosive plays and things of that nature. But this is the same guy that Lane Kiffin had getting these explosive plays. We saw him hit big plays to Ridley and things of that nature. So is it just the style of the offense that Daboll runs versus Kiffin? Is Kiffin just more creative and was able to use things more and use these kids in a different way? Do you think that has something to do with it?
I think that has everything to do with it because, Brian Daboll runs a pro-style offense. That means it's 5-7-step drop, hit your back foot, let the football go, make one or two reads. Lane Kiffin's offense was first read. If your first read's not there, you make something happen. They didn't make it complicated for him. If you saw on that final play in overtime where he threw the touchdown to Devontae Smith, he looked the safety off. He looked him off to the right and then came back to his left, and he was wide open. We have never seen Jalen Hurts go through his progressions in that type of way, all right? So in a Brian Daboll offense, he needs a quarterback that's able to read and react. In a Lane Kiffin offense, they kept it simple for Jalen Hurts, and he was just able to make plays off reactions. It wasn't a bunch of, okay, my first receiver's here, I'm going to go to my second receiver, because if you saw the discrepancy in catches this year in our wide receiver core.
Yeah. It was, that's what I'm saying. Ridley for sure suffered.
Exactly. Ridley was the only person that was in double digits up until the Auburn game.
Right.
Besides Bo Scarborough. Bo Scarborough was the only other person. And those were just little flare outside of the backfield. So you saw that he was unable to get a lot of receivers involved. And when Tua Tagovailoa came in the game, we had 5 different receivers catch passes in the second half. 4 of them freshmen. So you saw the progressions and the ability that he has to spread the ball around and make all the throws and do what Brian Daboll wants him to do, which is get that ball out of there quick.
Yep. And we're going to get more into that as we move on to the show. All right, question number 3, G. Your main man from Kansas City, the offensive coordinator, Mr. Nagy, is now the head coach in Chicago. Good fit, in your opinion?
It remains to be seen for a couple of reasons. One, he's never been a head coach at any level. Secondly, he was really the primary play caller for 6 games. Not this whole season. He may be listed as the offense coordinator for the season, but he called plays for 6 games. The Chiefs started off 5-0, and then, I hexed them, and
yes,
then they finished. Then they finished 5-6. But when they were at one point, they were 6-5. Then Andy Reid gave the play calling duties to Nagy, and then they went 4-1. They averaged about 29 points a game, and apparently that's enough to get you a head coaching job. So it remains to be seen. He does have the young quarterback, and like we said before, if you're building your team around a young quarterback, you got to get him an offensive coach that's going to groom him, or at least get him to run his offense, all of that.
Right.
But that's what the Eagles have done with Peterson. That's what Houston's been trying to do with Bill O'Brien all this time. But it remains to be seen. I'm still not sure if Trubisky is good, but maybe it was a matter of getting him a head coach who can call offensive plays for him.
Right.
You know, that's what worked out for Jared Goff this past year. But still, he's called plays for 6 games.
Right.
Last year, he was the co-offensive coordinator. So he's really only had that job for, it's really just 6 games, like not a whole season, not 2 seasons. But, and then, you know, I feel like Hancock may have said this in his head. Maybe it's the right skin color as well. It's only 6 games.
Well, I can see this being a copycat of the Sean McVay, Jared Goff kind of deal.
Right.
Trying to assist in the young quarterback by bringing a young quarterback guru. Well, we won't say that. A young offensive.
Don't get you started.
That's a four-letter word to me right now.
A young offensive coordinator of 6 games to come over to try to assist in helping young Mitch Trubisky, which I don't understand why did they even sign Glennon from the beginning if that was the case. So, but we'll see.
I think also a little work that Nagy did with Patrick Mahomes, the 10 pick overall. I believe him being able to work with him, that's been a rumor that, hey, we saw that Patrick Mahomes has made some strides, even though he didn't play much behind Alex Smith this year.
Right.
That was a little bit of the reason that he can work with young quarterbacks and get them ready.
Well, if that's the case, why don't you keep him with Mahomes? I mean, I don't understand that. All right, Han, question number 4. Looks like there are some trouble on the left coast. Mr. LeVar Ball has spoken out about Luke Walton. Now the Lakers are having some concerns now that they're concerned about LeVar may affect Lonzo.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on this?
You know, I looked at this thing, man. I've been one of the biggest supporters of LeVar Ball because, like I said, he got his kid to the ultimate in basketball. I really think he's honestly done a disservice to the other kids. I'm just going to be honest with you. Because I think when you look at LiAngelo, I think the one Giello, I think his only avenue to the NBA was to come through college, maybe play 2 years or whatever, improve himself. Because I think he's put him in a position now to where the NBA is now kind of going to shun him, even because he's not that name or that player that Lonzo has aspired to be,
right,
or that we've been, you know, said that he's going to be. The young one, you know, I just think he needed to play basketball in the States, to be honest with you. That's just the way I feel about it.
Right.
I think you've actually put a harder road in front of the kids than they needed to have. Now, as far as getting back to the Lakers situation, I think the biggest issue I have is that when you start speaking these things and talking, you put a pressure on Lonzo, not about his performance, but about the locker room. Like, you know, you might drive a wedge between he and his teammates.
Right.
Because if he says something, even if it's marginal along the lines of what you might be having in the locker room, you know, it might not be that Lonzo went back and told him, but he might have hit on the right thing that might have been said in the locker room or whatever. Right. Then it's like, are you going back talking to your dad? You know, what are you saying? Are you the one going back saying that nobody is listening to Luke? You know, and it's just a bad situation. You know, when he first came here into the Lakers organization, he was like, I'm going to give him the magic. I'm going to back up. I'm not going to have anything to say and whatever. So, you know, even some of the things that he might be saying might have some credence if you want to look at it. I didn't think Luke Walton was all that when he was with Golden State. I felt like I could have won 60 games with Golden State.
Right.
You know, so the thing is, I think he's given this Cadillac organization, and I don't think he did enough to earn it, to be honest with you, because he was in the system with Golden State, which was a kind of self-sustained. So, you know, I don't know if Luke is the right guy to nurture all these young players anyway and blend them, you know, blend the PlayStation, Xbox, you know, mentality that they have. And then you have certain veteran players that, you know, they're kind of clashing with because they feel like they should be playing.
Right.
So I think, and also they feel like I'm just holding the spot here because next year when free agent time comes, I'm out of here anyway, and you're going to build around Lonzo and whatever free agency comes. So I'm just holding the seat. So I think it's a bad situation because you're bringing other things into it that don't need to be brought into it. And I think LeVar is adding a pressure that just doesn't need to be added.
Yeah, it's tough. I think at this point, Magic is going to have to say something. The Laker organization is going to have to put a stop to it. I don't know what they could do.
Right. That's the key. What can they
do? Yeah, what can you do at
There's
this
nothing
point?
They can do.
Yeah.
Because you can't stop him from talking on his own time.
Yeah.
You can't put a gag order on LeVar Ball.
Right.
But the one thing that Luke Walton does have working in his favor, you see the progression of the young players. You see Brandon Ingram improving.
You see
Kuzma improve. The thing and what Luke Walton is known for around the league is he's great at player development. You know, Luke Walton started out as the guy who wakes up at 6 o'clock and meets you at the gym and throws you passes. He was that guy. So he's showing that he's able to develop the players and he's only 37 years old. He's a young guy, so he's able to relate to the millennials. So I believe he's a right fit now. Can he get them over the hump? That's yet to be seen. But if we don't give him time, it's going to be a travesty. And he's starting to get into the back and forth with LeVar also. Because he made the comment the other day. I took Lonzo out because of what LeVar said.
He was half joking. But he said it.
But you don't want to get into that because social media takes that and they run it.
Exactly. And then as young as he is and as young as his career is as far as a coach, this is not something that he needs to really be dealing with,
right.
You know, rather than dealing with the team, a Cadillac organization at that.
Right.
You know, you this is not Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But Luke Walton played for them. He won championships. He had great moments. Exactly. So he's invested.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, man. I think it's a little tough, man. I don't know if he's the guy that should have been given the keys to this organization.
Yeah.
Like you said, player development and all that, that's fine. But I don't know. Maybe like you said, maybe he's just a bridge anyway.
Yeah, we'll see. Speaking of the Ball family, D-Will, last question in the hot news. Your thoughts on the Ball brothers' debut combining for 29 points?
It wasn't a bad showing. I will say that. If anybody knows anything about international ball, it's a different brand of basketball, okay? Thing was, they were playing a junior team. They weren't playing on a higher level team. These were kids that were college age, 17, 18, 19 year olds. So it was basically like they were playing in college. But they, like you say, they combined for 29 points. Jello, aka LeAngelo Ball, the middle son, the one who was arrested.
Fredo.
Yeah, the one that was arrested in China and left UCLA. He had 19 points. He had a pretty good showing. I know he probably didn't do as much as he could, but I would have liked to see him do more against the level of competition that he had. But I was overly impressed with Melo, a.k.a. LaMelo Ball, the younger brother, Swaggy M, whatever you want to call him, because he swagged out. I was very impressed with him. He had 10 points, 9 assists, but you could just see his command of the floor, his presence on the basketball court, his ability to be athletic, his ability to find people. He can get to the basket. He can score. And as you see, he's stretching out now. He's getting a lot taller.
Yeah, a lot
so I really believe he has the potential if he continues to keep his head on straight. And I kind of disagree with Hannah a little bit because we had this conversation briefly with Bobel Basketball. We had a brief conversation with him. He's playing professional basketball. And over there, and I was talking to my brother early who played 9 years overseas, they're going to be able to develop their skills over there because those guys, they don't have to worry about school. They no longer have to go to class. They're going to practice 2 to 3 times per day. They're going to be playing basketball. They're going to eat, sleep, and poop basketball. So I believe it's going to help LaMelo develop his skills because we all know how bad the AAU circuit in high school basketball is right now. You're not learning much. You're not developing. If you're not a top talent, it's really a struggle to get to the next level. So I really believe this will help him because he will learn not only the professional and pro game, but he'll be able to spend his whole day concentrating on developing his skills and get better as a basketball player.
And albeit LeVar stays out of.
Well, he's not staying out of that because if anybody saw the game, Big Baller Brand was everywhere.
Right.
It was a Big Baller Brand logo in the center of the paint. Where in the NBA, where is the block charge line? That was a Big Baller Brand logo.
Right.
It was.
You saw the referee too.
They had on Big Baller Brand.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying about playing basketball more and whatever, but they do that to these schools like Oak Hill and Montverde. They're doing the same thing. They go into school to play basketball. They don't really. These schools, just like I was listening to a story the other day, quick story about Gerald Hill, who's back in the NBA and burning up the NBA.
Gerald Green.
Yeah.
Burning it up right now.
Right. With nine fingers.
He's shooting. Somebody need to cut their fingers off. Maybe Lonzo will go get an invitation.
Oh, Lord.
But anyway, what I'm saying about, he went to a school that they said was in the strip mall.
Right.
And you see what I'm saying?
In Houston.
Yeah. So who's Bishop with something? The coach.
I can't remember.
The coach is, I think, that, like, don't get shorters. Me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
The coach's son or something was older than his uncle or something like that. It was crazy. But that tells you the type of situation that these schools do just to get whatever. They play basketball, and they do that here. I mean, he didn't have to go to Lithuania just to play basketball. Now, I understand what you're saying about maybe getting more fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a key. But I think the Oak Hills and Mount Verde. Yep. They coach.
Bishop Gorman in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from, but
he
could have
stayed in the States.
But for Jello, it probably won't help
him. It won't help Jello at all.
But LaMelo,
it's going to help him.
He has a multitude of opportunities as far as. Because you got to remember, he's the baby, but he may outgrow all of them.
Well, I told you, I thought he was going to be the better player anyway.
Right.
Remember, I told you, star written all over him.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you.
They could have drafted him last year. He was ready.
One of the major keys that we're missing, one of the major points we're missing with them being in Lithuania and playing overseas, they're away from all distractions. All right? Yeah. There's no riding the streets in your Lamborghini where you can get into trouble. You see what I'm saying?
I hope it works out, D. I really do. I just don't think Jello has. I think he's really messed his thing up. He might play Gatorade League or something.
Yeah.
But do you think that it's because they're just playing basketball? Like, they don't have to worry about school, and like you said, with any other distractions, it's just about basketball. So if it's basketball 24/7 for the next year and a half, then it can only help.
Yeah, as long as they're not playing against farmers and goat herders or whatever. We don't know what kind of competition they're playing against.
Yeah,
you say it was a junior. I mean,
what was it? That was an exhibition game. That wasn't a real game.
Well, all right, we'll put a pin in and see what happens. I'm wishing the best for
them. They're just getting their feet wet out there.
Yeah, all right. That's it. All right, man. Well, that's going to end it for the hot news. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, of course, we got the Falcon Report with our main guy, DW. You're listening to the Sports Roundtable, SRTRadio.com.
We'll be back with more Sports Roundtable on the Worldwide Radio Network.
Are you looking for a new, pre-owned, or used car to get you around the city, or simply from point A to point B? Look no further. Jay's Used Cars is the place to be. Jay believes your job is your credit, and no matter what your situation is, Jay will get you in a car. Visit Jay's at 3820 Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker, and mention Sports Roundtable, get a 10% discount. Go to jaysusedcars.com to check out the inventory. Jay's Used Cars, where they stack them deep and sell them cheap.
What's up? This your man, D-Will the Coach, here on behalf of Real Talk Tees. Real Talk Tees is for the players, geniuses, and bosses. For those who hustle, for the fresh, and for the iconic. Real Talk Tees is urban, affordable, vintage t-shirts to help you express yourself. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com to order yours today. So how about this? You got a specific mood in mind? Custom orders are available also to help you and yours stand out. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com, where what's real last forever.
Sports Roundtable.
Oh, you know, UCF, that's cool. It's a nice little story, but it's being the tallest midget at the party. I mean, it really don't mean nothing.
It means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Catch Sports Roundtable every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on WWWE 1100 AM and SRTRadio.com.
What do Falcons do?
Falcons rise up. Please welcome everyone's favorite Falcoholic, David D.W. Walker.
Sports Roundtable back at you and on the phone. He's here. Each and every week, you can find him on Twitter at FalconholicDW. Got one of the hottest podcasts going around, and you can catch it on all the podcast player stations and things of that nature. And he's on the phone. D-Dub, how you doing and how you feeling?
I am great. How are you guys?
Hey, what's up, D-Dub?
Good, man. We good. All right, let's jump right into it, D-W. The Falcons goes to the left coast this past Saturday night. And they put a stamp into the playoffs. Can you give us a grade for the Falcons' win versus the Rams?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, it's hard to go on the road, and it's hard to cross the coast. And, you know, going up against the top-scoring offense in the NFL this year, people may have forgotten that, but the Rams had the most points this year, you know, almost 30 points per game.
Yep.
And they held them to 13 points. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. You have to give that an A-plus performance, especially with what the defense did.
Yep, I agree. I agree. So when I look at the offense, and I looked at the offense this past weekend, and when I come back down to earth, are we average fans or just fans alone, are we placing – too much expectations on the offense based on last year's performance?
I think that's a part of it. You know, certainly having one of the best seasons in NFL history from an offensive perspective is going to skew everything. It's going to be hard to repeat that.
Right.
You know, changing a bunch of coaches, the offensive coordinator, it was going to have an impact. And it's just hard to play at that level, you know, over an extended period of time. That said, there are legitimate concerns, and there have been all year. There have been things that have been inconsistent. You know, the drops this year have been mind-boggling. This is still a very talented team that can still turn it on at any moment. But there are concerns about the offense that go past just, you know, the natural regression we expected after making all these changes in the offseason.
I got you. Now, when I looked at the defense, it's kind of hard to not see the improvement. And with that being said, I want to ask you about this guy. How close is Deion Jones from being that guy that we talk about defensively, like we talk about Luke Kuechly or Thomas Davis?
If he's not there already, he will be there very, very soon. He's, especially if you look at the last several regular season games, he has been nothing short of dominant, both in pass coverage. Quarterbacks can't complete passes anywhere near Deion Jones, and in run stopping. That was one of his weaknesses coming into the season. Is you know, he had a harder time getting off of blocks from linemen. This year, he has absolutely been a force in helping to stop the run, and has been a big factor in turning the Falcons' woes around in that regard. So, I think next year you're going to hear people talking about Deion Jones in the same light that they do talk about Luke Kuechly.
Gotcha. You listen to Sports Roundtable, and on the phone we got our main man, D.W. from the Falcoholic, doing the Falcon Report.
Yeah, D.W., just to tag on to what that Harris and I was talking about, that do you think what will really get him to that next level, we're talking about Deion Jones, is maybe more play recognition, but pre-snap reading, kind of anticipating or knowing where the play is going? You think that's what gets him to the next level?
I do. I think that's a big part of it. A player with his level of athleticism is able to make up for that, you know, that split second where he's not diagnosing as quick as, you know, a veteran in the league. And I think we've already seen him improve in that regard. He has played far more instinctual this year than he did last year. And I think one more season, under his belt is just going to improve that. You'll see him snap to the ball even faster. And when you combine that with his speed and his ability to go sideline to sideline, that makes him an absolute force in the middle.
Right. So leading into this week's game, do you expect any wrinkles, anything that we, might not have seen during the season? I'm sure it's got to be something that they'll put in. You got any tips on what we might look for?
They're putting in Nick Foles, so that certainly helps.
No, I mean on the Falcons side. I mean, like we've seen Sanu. I know Foles, that's a good thing. But seeing that we saw Sanu line up under center a little bit, well, not under center, but at least behind the center, do you think we'll see anything like that or anything that, might catch Philadelphia off guard?
One player to keep an eye on who's been, really quiet so far is Taylor Gabriel. If you remember back to last year going up into Philadelphia, he had a big game against them. The Eagles, they've got some pretty decent corners, but we can win with speed. So I would not be surprised to see the Falcons maybe try to take advantage of that a little bit more and use a guy like Gabriel to take the top off.
Right. Now, just to piggyback and to tie Foles in a little bit, you think we'll be stacking the line and putting pressure on putting the pressure on Foles to make plays? I mean, they do have wide receivers that we have to be cognizant of, but do you try to limit the running back situation and make him have to pass the ball?
Oh, yeah. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm wanting to run the ball. And with their offensive line, they want to get out and they just want to play smash mouth. And if I'm the Falcons, at least initially, I am selling out to stop the run. And like you said, I want to make Nick Foles throw the ball to their receivers consistently and throw in the traffic, against guys like Trufant and Alford and Allen, who have all been playing at a much higher level in the playoffs as well. They had a fantastic game against the Rams. So, yeah, I want to see Nick Foles throw it. And if that means, putting 8-9 guys in the box and just challenging him, daring him to throw, absolutely. I want to shut down the run and put it in the quarterback's hands.
Right. Now, this last thing, I'm looking at the coaching situation. We look at Dan Quinn. Looking back, what he's been in the last 3 Super Bowls, I guess, in some capacity as a coach.
Right.
So that definitely should be an edge. With the experience gained last year as being the head coach, do you think that will play a part in giving the Falcons an edge in this game?
I think you have to look back to last week. And to me, that was one of the things that stood out between the Rams, a young and inexperienced team, and the Falcons. The Falcons just looked like they were attacking fiercely. They were playing at another speed than the Rams were. And I think that comes down to that experience in the playoffs. And I think it comes down to Dan Quinn having been there, many of the players having been there, these guys having seen what it takes, what the speed of the game is like in the playoffs, and executing on that. So I think it's absolutely a factor. You hear players talk about it all the time, that the playoffs are just another level. It's a higher level than even the regular season. And I think we saw that last week, and I think we'll potentially see it again this week.
All right, you're listening to Sports Roundtable. And on the phone, you hear him every week. D.W. is on the phone, and D.Will got a couple of questions.
What's up, D.Dub? I do got one. We have seen the offense turn around a little bit here in the last few weeks. Do you think that Coach Steve Sarkisian is finally settled in as OC and is getting a little bit more comfortable with play calling and getting more acclimated with his receivers and his weapons that he has, and he's starting to use them in the right ways, and you see Matt getting a little bit more comfortable also. Do you think Sark has finally settled in as OC?
I think he has. I think he's now, that said, I don't think he's Kyle Shanahan. And again, people who want to make that comparison need to remember Shanahan was in the league for a decade before he had the fantastic 2016 season that he did. And Sark is in his first year in the NFL. But that said, I do think that he is doing a lot of things better. He still has moments where, we see these play calls and I'm just left scratching my head. But to be fair, I think you could say that of every single NFL team. Even the Patriots will have those moments where people are scratching their head and thinking, what was he thinking? So I do think there's been a lot of improvement, and you can't hold Sark accountable for dropped balls, missed blocks, or the defense just blowing up your offensive line. You know, those are things outside of his control, but I do think he has improved dramatically from the beginning of the season.
Sounds good. And one more. Should we be concerned at all with Julio and Matt Ryan sitting out of practice this week?
I wouldn't be. Honestly, those two guys are such professionals. They've already got an incredible rapport with one another. When they step on the field, they know what they want to do, and they're going to be able to execute on that.
ADW, this is G. I know that the Falcons don't want to get ahead of themselves with them. They are a three-point favorite this week, but they're still facing a top-five defense this year. What is going to be the best way for the Falcons to attack the Eagles' defense and then just hope for Nick Foles, just wait for Nick Foles to show up on the other end?
Well, definitely Nick Foles helps. The Eagles have an absolutely fierce, defensive front. You look at, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry. You know, these guys can get after the passer. One of the best ways you can help your quarterback in that situation is to establish the run. Now, the Eagles are also very good against the run, but in this instance, I think you have to find a way to at least establish the running game and take some pressure off of the passing game. Or else you could see Matt Ryan getting hit consistently all day. This is a very, very good defense, as you mentioned, and definitely not one that we should sleep on. As a matter of fact, in one of my write-ups at thefalcoholic.com, I talked about this specific matchup and how it does favor the Eagles.
All right, I got one more for you. I see that Devontae Freeman was listed as questionable for this week. Is there any indication that he might not play or see him in any kind of limited role?
I think he's going to be there. The practice report this week, today, looked like, the only people who sat out, it was, very limited. I didn't see Devontae on the list again, so I think he'll be in. And honestly, unless his leg fell off, I think he would be in.
Gotcha. All right, you listen to Sports Roundtable, and on the phone we got DW of the Falcoholic. Catch all of his articles on thefalcoholic.com. D-Dub, so surprisingly, the Falcons are in top five defense in red zone defense.
Mm-hmm.
But are you having any concerns, or should we have any concerns over the last couple of games that our red zone offense is not kind of showing up?
It's definitely a concern. And don't take anything away from the Rams. They actually have a really good defense. Wade Phillips is still one of the best defensive coordinators in the league. You know, they have the best defensive tackle in the league, and Aaron Donald, and he definitely caused damage. But at the same time, you've got to be able to convert those into touchdowns. Thank goodness we have Matt Bryant, or else this could have been a very different game this weekend. And the road to the Super Bowl is going to have to go through a bunch of teams that have really good defenses. Philadelphia this weekend, and then if you're looking ahead a little bit, the Vikings and the Saints, they both have good defenses as well. They can get after the passer. It's not an excuse, and it is a concern. If you're going to win these games, you've got to be able to score in the red zone, and the Falcons have not done that consistently this year.
All right, so you talked about the Philadelphia Eagles and how they want to do smash mouth football, and talked about a couple of defensive guys that they do have. Would getting the Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman out in space, could that help slow down and kind of be a sort of send my run game, if you will?
Yes, absolutely. Philadelphia doesn't have a lot of weaknesses on defense, but if you can keep them in their base set, and a good way to do that is to stay, tight end heavy with, a running back and a fullback in the backfield. If you can keep them in their base set, and swing out a guy like Coleman or Freeman for a pass,
right,
that is advantageous for you. You look at a guy like, Danelle Ellerby, one of the linebackers for the Eagles, and if you can get a matchup between him and Tevin Coleman in the passing game, that is very favorable. So, yeah, I would absolutely try to take advantage of the Falcons running backs out wide in this game. This is a perfect opportunity to do it.
All right. I got an email earlier this week, and the email said, what has happened to the stretch play runs opposed to the tall sweeps?
Well, you know, I think part of the stretch plays is, you know, at least the past several weeks has been the absence of Andy Levitre. You know, Ben Garland has done a really good job in his absence, but Levitre was one of our best run blockers. And Levitre also, you know, had a long background of being, you know, a zone blocking scheme offensive lineman, you know, going back to his days with the Buffalo Bills.
Gotcha.
And we, you know, when we lost him, it had an impact on, you know, some of those running plays. So gotcha. I think his absence is definitely a big part of that.
Okay, that answers the question. So that's big. So with all that being said, can you give us your predictions for this week's game?
Yep. Honestly, this Falcons offense is going to have a tough matchup. You know, they've got to find a way to score again. If anything, this is going to be an even tougher matchup than what we faced against the Rams and Aaron Donald. The Eagles have talent on all three levels on defense. The wild card here is Nick Foles. If the Nick Foles that we have all seen over the years shows up, this Falcons defense could be the deciding factor in this game. And I think ultimately that is what will happen. I think this Falcons defense is playing with confidence. They're playing fast. They're hitting hard. They're not making a lot of mistakes. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt in this game. I'm going to go with a low score. It's going to drive some fans crazy, but I'm going to say Falcons win this one, head to the NFC Championship game 16-12.
All right. Woo! There it is. 16-12, and hopefully we get a touchdown within that. And, well, before you leave, please let everybody know where they can find your work and your Twitter and your podcast.
Yep, you can follow me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW, and the Falcoholic Podcast is available on iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, and SoundCloud.
DW, before you go, though, you just predicted 16-12. We know the stats on the year that Atlanta is undefeated when they score more than 26 points, and they struggle when they score
20 points.
Over 20 points, and they struggle when they score under.
Yep.
Do you think we can really pull it out without going over 20?
With Nick Foles on the other side, absolutely.
I was trying to pull it out.
There it is. ADW, we really appreciate the information. Thanks again, and hopefully let's talk next week.
Hope so. Rise up, guys.
Rise up. There he is, DW.
That score scares me.
Yeah, but DW been on the road.
He been on the road, but that scares me. We trends and stats say a lot. They say a lot. And if we don't go over 20, we're like, what, 0?
Yeah, we
one
winless. If we, yes.
So, man, hey,
but
you know.
I don't think we face Nick Foles in any of those games either.
Facts.
So, I think the weather in Philadelphia is 40 to 50 degrees.
Yeah, it's supposed to be around
55.
That's a plus for us.
That's a good thing because if we're looking back at these stats, Philadelphia only gives up 79 yards of rushing a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's.
And G just said that Devontae Freeman is a little banged up.
Yeah, so wow. But they give up 306 passing, which is still not a lot in the NFL. So, man, it's under 80 yards a game rushing.
Whew. But that's why you got to get Tevin Coleman and Devontae out in the backfield with them short passes against the linebackers.
The extended runs.
I can't say the same game plan, but the game plan they used against Denver last year when they got Coleman involved in a lot of different in the pass game. Mm-hmm. So I think that helps slows it down and kind of creates some running lanes as well.
And also, you mentioned Brandon Graham. He will be out.
Is he out?
He is out. He's listed as out right now.
Oh, okay.
So that may help a little bit.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, man. In other news, what would make paying John Gruden $100 million worth it? He had a press conference the other day.
I mean, he's already done it because he's made the Raiders relevant. I mean, sometimes bringing a big name in helps the franchise more than anything. One thing about it, they're going to be playing a lower schedule, one of the middle, six. Their schedule won't be tough.
Yeah.
You know, and their division has struggled when you look at the quarterback situations. We don't know what Patrick Mahomes is going to be. We know Denver right now doesn't have a quarterback.
So you said Alex Smith is out?
Yeah, Alex Smith gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's Patrick Mahomes' team?
Yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes' team.
I think you guys should consider, I think it's like payback or restitution. Like, we didn't mean to trade you to Tampa Bay.
Exactly. Because they haven't been anything since they got rid of him.
Yeah. So
and he cherry picks. I mean, you look at what he has. If he can get Amari Cooper back up to what they expect him to be. You know, I don't know if Crabtree will be there, but they can find another complimentary receiver for that. I think Crabtree might have worn out his welcome a little bit, but under new regime, who knows? Don't know what's going to go on with Beast Mode. You can find a decent running back. You might be able to get some in the second, third round. Who knows? But I think the makings are there. You got a beast on defense. You got a Irvin and
Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack are just... They get pressure from the outside. If they can get any kind of push up the front, they'll be fine. They got a big offensive line, so he's going to run the football for sure. You know, they already talked about Donald Penn, who played for him, I think, in Tampa Bay, who's already – he's excited. He's already singing his praises and talking about how the team is going to blossom under Gruden's tutelage. So I think it's kind of – I think it's perfect for him.
Does he have to win a Super Bowl within the next 3 years?
They're going to be going to Las Vegas whenever they break ground. I think as long as he's a winner going to Vegas, I'm not even worried about the Super Bowl right now. Okay. He has to be viable going into that Las Vegas thing, and he doesn't have any pressure. He's got a 10-year contract. You're not going to fire him,
right?
10 years.
So, do you think he made the right decisions with his new OC in DC? Greg Olsen is the OC.
He's going to be the OC.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's calling the play.
I mean, because, so it really does.
Yeah, he already said he called the play.
I mean, he's going to be the OC.
Yeah.
DC defense, you know, he probably won't even meet with them.
Yeah.
You know, he probably won't touch defense or see them until it's, you know, game day. So
all right.
It doesn't even matter.
Well, speaking of OC, D. Will, the Panthers fire former Bama coach Mike Shula.
Mm-hmm. And the quarterback's coach, former champion,
Ken Dorsey. They say Nerv Turner is the number one target, in which I've heard this week that he's resigning from Minnesota because of
he want that job.
Some disagreements with the head coach.
Yeah,
which is Zimmer.
Zimmer don't care. the thing is, probably Norv wants to open up and be more explosive.
Exactly.
And if you look at what Zimmer does, Zimmer said, look, don't lose the game.
Yeah. Right.
Stay. We got a top defense.
Sound like Nick Saban.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to run the football and don't lose.
You know who they have
the
a quarterback?
Case Keenum.
He's got to be conservative.
And that's the thing. He's like, man, do not put that ball in harm's way.
But right. I agree. You had Case Keenum. So if you're going to bring Norv Turner in and you got a quarterback like Cam Newton. Now, we can't say that Mike Shula and Ken Dorsey didn't do a good job. We saw Cam Newton progress over their tenure with the Carolina Panthers. So if they can bring in someone like a Norv Turner who can open it up, we may see a different Cam Newton.
Yeah,
and we also may see him stop taking those brutal hits that he takes and hope by for two things, holding on to the football, because Cam has a bad habit of that because he has such a cannon of an arm. He thinks he can make the throws. He thinks he can do certain things that other quarterbacks can't do. So hopefully we see a different Cam Newton, even though we've seen him progress over the last three or four years.
To me, the biggest thing that happened with Cam is when he lost Ted Ginn, because Ted Ginn took the top off the defense.
Yeah, he's going to have to get somebody.
He's got to get somebody to throw to, man. You look at his wide receiver core. What's the old term? Fish heads and rice, that's all he got. His wide receiving core is horrible.
Well, they going to have to fix his mechanics first.
I don't that's like Lonzo Ball jump shot. I don't think you can do anything about
that.
He's
going to muscle that ball out. He's going to throw off his back foot. That just
is going to sell and just go keep selling.
And look, they won how many games this year?
They won 10.
11.
11.
11? 11? Yeah.
It's a lot of teams in the NFL don't win 11 games and playing this, which is the toughest division in football.
It is. Yeah.
So
with no weapons.
It's right. It's a lot of detractors from Cam because he doesn't play quarterback the way that they play.
And I don't.
And he doesn't he uses his legs. That's what I'm saying.
And of course it wasn't Mike Shula or Ken Dorsey's fault. It was they needed to make a change in their organization. They needed new blood. They needed something else new because they've been there for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So I believe this was just a change of regime to get some new, to get something else going.
But, D. Will, if you want a drop back passer, you got the wrong pass. You got the wrong quarterback.
Oh, of course.
The reason Cam is effective is because what he's always been.
The intangibles.
Right. He's able to make plays with his legs and throw. He throws the ball from angles and spots that normal
he
people
has
can't
a
do
cannon.
Exactly. So this is the same thing I said about Mike Vick. You're gonna mess him up if you try to make him be anything. Let him burn out.
Yeah.
He's like Hayless Comet, baby. Let him burn.
I feel you. Speaking of another offensive coordinator, Seattle gets rid of the OC. Bevel. And there are some reports out that saying that Sark may want to reunite with Pete Carroll in Seattle. Dan Quinn came out today and said that's not going to happen. But, well, there's smoke.
I don't know if Sark is a Southern guy, if you know what I mean. He's more of a
West Coast
guy.
He was a coach of Washington, coach at USC.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, he's gotten back into football, but
Even an NFL guy, though?
Well, I mean
that can be said for a lot of people.
He was on Pete Carroll's staff at USC
college.
I just think he's a West Coast, you know, West Coast type of guy, and I think if that presents itself, I think he goes.
Well, we know what type of trouble he had when he was on the West Coast. Ever since he's been in the South, he's quote unquote got his act together. In Washington and in USC, it was real lushful.
Yeah, well, old ladies drink here.
True. True.
Put a little something in my tea.
Yeah, true.
All right, man. Let's start it and then we go to break, and when we come back, we go finish it. But I'm gonna take it to break this way. And we talked about it earlier. The Georgia Alabama game, personally, I think Kirby Smart did not prepare for what happened in the second half as far as bringing in Tua. It's no way that he could have prepared for that because they looked lost ever since. To me, what happened was they got tight in the second half only because in the first half, it didn't matter if they went 3-and-out. Because they figured they can stop Alabama anyway. Because if I'm making Jalen throw the ball, that's what I want him to do anyway. So I can go 3-and-out. And if I get points for it, if I get some points on the other, it's just bonus. Second half came, and Tua started throwing the ball. That started to put a little pressure on. Now we need to try to score. So it mattered if we went 3-and-out. And then you start to see Fromm not make those passes that he would normally make.
They Georgia had a bad scheme because we talked about this. They came out and their first 9 plays were passes. They didn't run the ball the first 9 plays. Their first 2 series, they had 0 runs.
I thought that was genius myself.
But it didn't work. He ended up throwing an interception.
They were
and they got 3 points out of it. That's all. So I
feel what you're saying.
They didn't get much, but in the second half, when it was time to open up like they did in the first half, when they needed to throw the football, what did they do? Their last 2 series, they only had 2 pass plays.
Yeah.
They got tight. That point blank period.
But he missed on third down to Swift.
That's
tight.
I know.
We can look at whether the defense didn't do. I can look at these plays. The touchdown that he hit Ridley on was luck.
Oh,
that was covered. He threw that in the coverage.
Well, no, he was throwing that to somebody
else. You had 20 sitting right there. Reed just didn't make a play on the ball. He came behind. Ridley came right behind 20. 20 was sitting there.
Yeah, he was throwing it to Najee Harris.
Exactly. And Ridley came behind him and intercepted the ball. The other play, the winning touchdown, you had the right defense on. You had a 2 deep
against a fly pattern. The safety stayed on the hash. The first thing he's got to do on the play is get wide and get deep.
Man, that was Tonga Viola, though. That was all quarterback.
It still doesn't matter. Now, one thing to me, he got left on the island because not on the island, but the corner's job is to reroute the receiver. He's got to put hands on him to reroute the receiver. The receiver got a free release, went straight up the rail. And the safety, his job against that on two deep is always to as deep and as wide as the receiver. His thing should have been. There was nothing holding him. He didn't have a crossing.
Quarterback held him.
That's what I'm saying.
That was great quarterback play.
He should not have been held because his job, he didn't do his job. His job is to do what?
Dead hand for the field.
Exactly. See, he was playing quarters coverage like he had a man outside. That's his response. That's why 14 was like, yeah, I got beat, but where were you? Right. Because his job was, 14's job is to redirect and take care of anything underneath. He's supposed to do that. A fly pattern against cover two is not supposed to work. To your point, Tua threw a rope. But that safety has to get off that hash.
I understand what you're saying.
But Tua was looking to his
doesn't
right.
Doesn't matter.
That's what made that safety move over.
That's what made the safety go over.
It's two safeties. That's not his side.
Let me tell y'all something.
That's not his side.
Let me tell y'all something. The play that Bama called was called all goals.
Right.
So we had three receivers on one side, one on the other. So it was three receivers running go patterns. So the safety, when he held him with his eyes, he had to cheat that way. Somebody was going to be open on that play if the safety doesn't go there.
Well, you don't give up the touchdown.
You were giving up a touchdown regardless.
His responsibility.
Go back and watch the play, Ham.
I watched it. I watched it from the all 22. Yeah. I watched it all night from the all 22. He stood there. First thing he did was took a step to the left.
Two people were going to be
and
open.
And he shouldn't have. He should have – his responsibility is deeper and wide as the zone. When you're in cover two, you don't have quarter coverage. You got half the field. And he should have been deep. Now, I do it again. Say
got to give offense credit, man.
That safety has to put hands on that guy. He can't get a free release. His job is to make him redirect. He didn't. But that safety blew that coverage.
Well, when we come back, we're going to continue more about this, about the Alabama Georgia, and we definitely go talk breakdown in this NFL. You listen to Sports Roundtable at srtradio.com on AM 1100.
Are you thinking about changing the station? You're only hurting yourself. Keep listening to Sports Roundtable on 1100 AM.
AM 1100. The opinions expressed during the sponsored programs on this station are strictly those of the program hosts, guests, and callers and are not necessarily those of Beasley Broadcast Group, this station, its staff, other advertisers, or agencies.
Basketball season is already underway, and even though you're playing, you want to take your game to the next level. That's where the Bo Bell Basketball Academy comes in. For boys and girls ages 6 and up, Atlanta's own Bo Bell has played and coached basketball all around the world and is here to share his philosophies to help any player maximize their potential. Visit CoachBoBell.com for details about upcoming camps or call 770-912-4104 for more information. Bo Bell Basketball Academy. Maximize your true potential.
There's a lot going on in the world, and your world is always changing. That's why it's important to stay connected. The latest news, the latest entertainment, the newest music. If it's in the air or on the air, it can be in the palm of your hand, wherever you are, with the iHeartRadio app.
iHeartRadio.
Over 1,500 live radio stations from across the country, and over 15 million songs to create your own custom stations. Text IHR to 45495 to download the app or listen at iHeartRadio.com. Standard text and data rates apply.
Sports Roundtable.
Would you babysit a 2-year-old for 1 month straight without getting paid? Or would you take a $3 pay cut for 2 months?
Oh, I'm babysitting.
I'm babysitting. Give me that little toddler.
Yeah, I'm babysitting.
Yeah.
For a whole month straight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get the Benadryl out.
You're on drugs, man.
Sleep.
Catch Sports Roundtable every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on WWWE 1100 AM and SRTRadio.com.
Uh-oh, Breezy.
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
S-R-T. Yeah. Crew.
Whoa.
SRT, yeah. They got that realness flowing in their DNA. Damn you lame, if you ain't tuned to SRT today. HO got that payload when he say so, what you betting on? Okay. Don't get mad at me on fantasy, break up Kyrie LeBron.
Oh, no.
I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tie forever, real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT, behind the glass, that G-Money. Man with a strong, I never lose, six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? We're back.
That's the defense coordinator.
Second half of the show. If y'all heard us during the break, we were just kind of breaking down cover two. Second half of the show, thanks for tuning in. First half of the show, we had some hot news. We had my main man, DW, call in. And we had some other news talking about LeVar Ball, talking about offensive coordinator. Would Cam do better with the new offensive coordinator? Remains to be seen. They did have a good year. I don't know if is Dorsey or Shula is being linked to Cam as this kind of why he has been so successful. I can't recall.
Shula has been okay. Because he's used him in the short, when they have short yardage situations.
Right. So it's
Cam's Shula. He's been the best option in the NFL.
So how does Cam feel about this?
He can't be happy. I don't think he's happy. We hadn't heard from him, but he can't be happy. Because
Even though he takes those hits, he doesn't mind playing like that.
He takes those hits on his own accord. Cam does that to himself a lot of times by holding on to the football and by bailing out.
Right.
Well, even with
and he don't know how to slide.
Even when he takes off running,
yeah, he don't know how to slide.
Right. Well, he done figured out how to slide and pop up and.
Yeah, I just think you gotta let Cam be Cam. If you don't let him be Cam, you might as well get another quarterback. I mean, seriously, he's not going to be Brady. He's not going to be Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not that. So you gotta let him be what he is.
Right.
But you gotta get him some better weapons. I mean, they did get McCaffrey, who's going to help a little bit in the passing game, but. They need a number one. They really don't have a number one.
They
receiver.
Need a two, a three.
Well, I'm saying Funches is not bad.
He's a two.
He should have made that catch though.
Yeah. But that's a two.
Yeah,
trying to be one. So you got tight.
Even Kevin Benjamin
really ain't a one.
He's really not a one. Really, you saw that when he got the Buffalo.
And obviously number 12 ain't neither.
Nah.
He dropped the touchdown.
He made a heck of a catch on that last drive though. That was.
Yeah, but he that dropped the nice touchdown. Yeah, I'd rather him drop the other one. Then.
Yeah, true.
All right, so let's get back to it. So basically, before we went to break, I was just basically saying simply, Kirby were not, they just wasn't,
like,
they just wasn't prepared for Tua in the passing.
They
as
ran
far
the
as
same
I'm concerned.
Stuff, though, because maybe not the same stuff, but what I'm saying is, the first drive, Jalen missed a touchdown.
Yeah, he did.
On the one he scrambled out and got the first down, if he doesn't feel – he was no pressure. He just took off. If he waits, Calvin Ridley ran the post, was wide open.
Yeah.
And then he missed Ridley again on a corner. So, I understand Kirby got a lot of goodwill in the first half. But by rights, I mean, Jalen Hurts missed touchdowns. He missed open receivers.
Jalen Hurts was just not on his game.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama could have been ahead going in the half, is what I'm saying.
Should have been.
You see what I'm saying? So, Kirby having that 13-point lead, they could have probably been up more if that block punt wasn't called back. They probably would have scored on that. They were in the red zone with the block punt.
That should have never happened because it was actually a false start.
Yeah, actually it was a false start.
I hear you. But they didn't call that point. They called offside.
Right, I got you.
But what you know, there were so many different bad calls in this game. The officiating, like I said in the beginning, officiating along with the swings of momentum, along with the big call to take out the quarterback and put in a W. It was just a great game overall. Mm-hmm. I think you take the good with the bad, wrap it up and say, great pass.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a great
because
game.
On that, because after the touchdown when Bama got back in the game and then Georgia came right back and went for 80, he stepped out of bounds. His foot was on the white. His heel was on the white.
I think you had to make sure, though, D. That you couldn't say conclusive. Did you think?
Here's my point.
I couldn't really tell.
Here's my point. If there's no beads came up and you didn't see any green in between his heel and the field. If you don't see any green, that is more than I paused it and zoomed in.
Yeah,
he was on the white.
If they would have called him out, I'd say he was out. If they call him in, you see, that's what we were talking about calls early this year when we were talking about it. If it's not to me, I didn't see it. When the way I saw it,
if
I couldn't tell. It wasn't
100%.
It was still a gray area.
If we look at it together and we don't come up with the same answer, it's not conclusive.
Mm. Well, to me, it was conclusive as heck because I saw his heel on the white. I didn't see any green in between it. And when you're in the green, you see the beads come up. When he stepped down, no black beads came up. So I'm like, what else do you need? That's what replay is for. You're able to zoom in and look. When they zoomed in, you saw clearly there was no green in between the white and the heel. It was just a bad officiating game.
Yeah, the Big Ten. So the Big Ten officials doesn't help the Big Ten conference. And so my question would be, what does this say about the SEC now?
It says what we always say. It's the best conference in the land. You know, you can say, you know, we thought it was going to be people were going to hate because it was a regional game, okay? Like, it was basically the SEC championship part, duh.
Yeah.
And I did that for the LSU. You know, SEC. It was the SEC championship part two. So, because that's what we figured we would have saw in Atlanta 2 weeks ago or a little bit over a month ago. But it just shows that regardless of from top to bottom, if the SEC is the strongest conference, we have the best teams in the nation.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care who stepped on that field with either Alabama or Georgia Monday night. They were losing that game. They were going to lose that game. I don't care if it's Ohio State, Oklahoma, whoever it may have been, whoever you put in that situation, the SEC was going to come out on top. So it basically tells us the SEC is the best conference in the country.
So this is the million-dollar question. Well, how much Kirby make?
I think he made six.
It's going to go up.
Okay. It's about to go way up.
It's about to go up. So this is the big question. Was it more Kirby this year, or was it the seniors?
I think it was a combination.
That made him successful?
Yes.
I think it's a combination. I think the seniors coming back was
because
big.
Because Lorenzo Carter,
yeah.
Bellamy, Raekwon.
It's 31 seniors. Just keep
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
it's 31
exactly.
seniors.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. So, but these are the ones that came back to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? These are the notables.
Right.
And hopefully 24 wasn't one of them. Because he just, I mean, well, maybe 14 because Paris is the one who was getting toasted all night. But anyway, was it the seniors or was it just Kirby?
I think it was kind of like a perfect storm, too, though. You got to look at they were in the right side of the conference also.
Okay.
Let's be real. I mean, they were in the right side of the conference. But they did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
You know, they won those games. Winning at Notre Dame catapulted their season. Because it gave them respectability. And I think it gave the team a belief that they could do something special. I think that more than anything made everything say, okay, maybe we got something here. You know, and I think they became a better football team than they even thought they were going to be. I'm sure they had aspirations, but winning that game kind of, you can tell it kind of fueled them the rest of the year. So, I mean, we'll see what happens now with these recruiting classes, but Kirby has injected a life into Georgia's program, no doubt. When he first, last year, I was a little hard on him because I thought he was like more of still the coordinator. And I might be putting the cart before the horse and putting him in that spot. But hey, second year, he's in the national championship game. Got to give him his prop.
Overtime in the national championship game.
Right.
Yeah.
And I second that. I believe I'm going to give a little bit more credit to Kirby because all these players, like we said, it's 31 seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And the key players on this team are seniors. And Mark Richt was unable to get it done with the same class. All right, so we have to.
That's a good point.
So we have to give Kirby credit for being able to bring these guys together, get them to buy in, and then get them to do what they're supposed to do on the field. Lorenzo Carter got in trouble under Mark Richt. He got in a. He was getting suspended. Mm-hmm. Things of that.
Bellamy had a little off the field also.
Exactly. How many suspensions did Kirby have this year? None that were notable. You see what I'm saying? So he changed the atmosphere of the program.
Yeah.
That was an offseason.
No, he had after
the. Oh, yeah, that was after the season. Come on, man.
That was the second time, wasn't it?
Yeah. This year. Hey, listen. Third time? Listen, we're talking about weed. Weed should be legal anyway.
Y'all know how it is in Athens. Yeah. They have, like, some outdated laws. The police are looking for these players.
Come on, man.
They're looking for
them. Weed should be legal anyway, so I'm not even going to hold that against him. But what I'm
saying is, so he get a pass by D. Will.
He get a pass. He can't get a pass from me. But I'm just saying, Kirby took this program that Mark Richt had. He took these great players that Mark Richt was able to recruit and get to come to school there, and he was able to do exactly what he was supposed to do with them. And now, with the recruiting class that he has coming in, led by the number one overall recruit in Justin Fields, who may be the starting quarterback next year.
And he would have put a little more pressure on that edge.
Exactly. Because he's a lot more athletic than
Jake Fromm. Read options, exactly.
So, like, Kirby has built the right foundation, and like I say, they little brother right now.
Yeah.
But now, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
I promise you I do. But you know, it's been since 80, mm-hmm. right? Since Georgia won that championship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So some would be reluctant to say, was it just the newness of changing the coach? And then the next year, you lose all these seniors.
But that's
and
what...
the only thing that you got to ride on is momentum. Are you that guy to bring... No, you now have 31 seniors next year. You've already got to the dance, so now the expectations goes up. So can you survive this as Kirby?
What, remember when I said about recruiting is a big part of it?
Right.
He has some recruits coming in. And see, that was the difference that I tweeted before the game, watching the field view. I love when they do big games on ESPN where you get different aspects, where they different channels, they'll show field level, they'll show this or whatever.
Megacast.
And watching them warm up, when you watch the linebackers from Bama and the defensive line, Georgia may have had 30% that type of athlete, and Bama had them in droves.
Right.
You know, 99, 94. They just looked different.
DeRon Payne and Raquan Davis.
Right. When you watch them play, number nine on the defense, what's his name, Hand?
Yeah, Deshaun Hand.
They just look different. And if Kirby can get those numbers, he can compete.
But so you saying
I'm saying the
depth.
The depth is the
cookie.
Biggest thing.
Okay.
Exactly. Because at the running back position, they were comparable.
I'm just asking the question that the Georgia people go ask.
Right, and that's the thing. He's got to get depth.
Okay.
He's got to be able to sustain injury. Mm-hmm. See, like I said, I told you, there was no other team in pro football or college football, Canadian League,
facts.
High school,
facts.
That could have withstood losing the amount of players that Bama did. And still win mm-hmm. to get to the national championship game, let alone win it. So that's the thing that you have to take into fact. It's the numbers.
Yeah. Georgia fans, I need them to temper it a little bit. I expect Georgia to take not much, but slightly a step back next year.
But you understand the concern.
Oh, I understand it without a doubt because they're ahead of schedule. Let's keep it real. Georgia's a little bit ahead of schedule.
Yeah,
granted they had 31 seniors this year, so they were an experienced team. But they were a little ahead of schedule with Kirby. So I believe they're going to take a slight step back next year. I still think they're going to win the East because the East is so down.
Right.
But to say that they can get back to the playoff and get back to a national championship game, that's going to be hard because, like you say, they're losing a lot of that depth. And the depth that they have coming in is young talent. It's unproven talent that hadn't played on this stage, hadn't been there before. So give them a year or two. I really believe they're going to be something to reckon with when this number one recruiting class that they have right now comes in.
Become juniors.
Oh, my goodness. They're going to be something to be reckoned with.
One thing to consider, though, is that in their in with this run that they made, their starting quarterback was a freshman. They had Swift, another freshman. So they're going to be if Fromm keeps his job next year, but they have the experience of going through this, mm-hmm. and also with Riley Ridley mm-hmm. making an impact.
He balled out.
Those guys can, even as sophomores, they have the experience of making this national championship run. So they could, I do understand it could be a slight step back just because of all the players they're losing.
Like he said, a depth standpoint.
It's depth. Yeah. If they can get the numbers, that's the thing. That's the thing right there. And they got to get 2 and 3 players like Roquan. They need two. They need 3 Roquan.
Exactly.
Alabama got 3 Deshaun hands. They got two.
Raekwon Davis.
They got all of them.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You go to the bullpen and go get a freshman quarterback and come in and lead you to a national championship.
With you know all I mean? Freshman just, wide receivers.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's all about the numbers and kids that are not afraid of the big stage because they performed on the biggest stage that we have in college football. They came out like, hey, this is what I do.
But hey, listen, we just know that Georgia and Alabama is about to run the SEC.
Because
in crunch time, it was 9 true freshmen on both sides of the football. 9 true freshmen that were the keys. Because that last in overtime, that when they got the field goal, you know who the back that was in? It was Swift. It was not Sony Michel or Nick Chubb.
It was freshman.
Jake Fromm's a freshman, and then Alabama with Henry Ruggs, who we had on this show prior to the season.
Absolutely,
Henry Ruggs. We had Devontae Smith. We have Jarrett Judy. And I'm gonna tell y'all something. Nobody will ever say anything about this play, but on the mad scramble that Tua Tagovailoa had, mm-hmm. where he had the Houdini play. Do you know what sprung him? It was and it should have been a flag. It was a crack back block
sure.
by Jarrett Judy, number one, 4.
Yep.
He laid him out, which gave him the area to get the first
down. And Roquan actually got held, but it was in a scramble play. It was in a scramble play, so it didn't get seen. So,
but I'm going to end the Bama.
Should have made the tackle.
I'm going to end the Jaws and the Alabama talking. We're going to move on to some NFL real quick. I'm so impressed with this. It's like Nick Saban said, y'all haven't seen all the freshmen that I have on my team. I'm going to go ahead and put them on display, even though I'm down 13 net.
Yep.
Trust.
Because I can tell you this. I can guarantee you half the Alabama fans probably can't even tell you who caught the touchdown pass to win the game.
I don't know. We got some loyal people over there, but them folks know
everybody. The bandwaggers did.
Okay, yeah, dude. Now they don't.
They don't know who caught the touchdown pass to win the game.
But one other thing before you move. One key thing is they have is that in blowout wins, they're able to put these folks in there and get experience.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? That helps a lot. They played a lot against Vandy.
They did. A whole bunch.
They played a lot against probably Tennessee.
Ole Miss.
And Ole Miss. And so it's not, you know, when they say, well, you ran the score up. You got to get these people experience.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Tagovailoa played a lot against Vandy.
He played a lot.
You see what I'm saying?
And similar plays.
So that comes in handy when they needed him.
And let's not forget.
You got to let them play. I hate when they talk about they ran the score up.
Oh, man, get out of here.
Why don't you let these people not do their job?
Yeah. And you got to understand, Devontae Smith, he had 6 catches on the season, right? 1 catch that night. But people tend to forget. In our toughest game of the year against Mississippi State on the road, guess who caught the winning touchdown? Devontae Smith.
You better tell me Devontae Smith.
There it Devontae is. Smith.
With that being said, let's go ahead and get into this sports roundtable discussion.
The roundtable discussion.
What are we talking about?
Hit it! Roundtable discussion. Sponsored by Bobel Basketball.
Bobel.
If you have a youngster that needs basketball training, please go to BobelBasketball.com, the number one trainer in the world. Doesn't matter whether you're in the United States or out of the States. Bobel got 40 years of experience, and he can get you done, baby. He got Lou Williams, and we are pubbing Lou Williams for an all-star team because he is a professional score. And you know why? Because he went to Bobel Basketball Academy.
Hey!
All right, so NFL football this past weekend. the Jags and the Bills game was
struggle ball.
Watching paint dry.
Yes.
Watching grass grow.
Damn, I need to come up with one.
I missed the ball. My fault. I fumble.
Watching water boil.
I mean.
There you go. That, thank you. Thank you.
Hey, listen. Running out of gas.
We talking good gas, y'all. 93-octane. 93-octane.
I think the Bills and Jag game made the national championship game look so much better. I mean, we actually saw football. You saw a team in the Jacksonville Jaguars who was 11-6 win a game that the quarterback had more running yards, rushing yards, than passing yards. 88-yard rushing, 87-yard passing. That is a shame.
Yes.
So, I don't even know what we can say about the Bills and the Jags game other than next.
Yeah.
To me, it's just a shame that the Jags are going to waste a championship defense by not getting a quarterback in there to run an offense. And you had a chance to get Kaepernick or whomever, somebody that was competent to play quarterback. And that's to me, the biggest takeaway I have from that is that you're going to waste a defense that's this good.
Yep. Well, they have to be working on that. They've probably been working on that for probably the last 3 months. Like, they can't bail on Bortles now.
No.
I mean, they couldn't 3 months ago.
I was talking about the beginning of the season. Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not talking
about
now.
You knew who he was.
Yeah, I'm talking, you knew what you had in Bortles with, you know, when you open a pack of ramen noodles, you know you got ramen noodles.
Yeah. It's how you looking for. That's it. Is it shrimp or chicken?
Ain't no meat. It just,
maybe they thought flavor. He was going to be 2015 again, where didn't he throw like 35 touchdowns or something like
did
that?
Did he?
Yeah. 4,000 yards.
Yeah, I think probably in the time when they were already down.
Yeah, they were garbage.
The garbage time. That's where a lot of his yards come. Yeah. So
Kevin loves stats. In Minnesota.
Ooh. Empty.
Anyway. So let's move on to
Russell Westbrook triple doubles.
They were winning games when he got triple doubles, though.
Yeah.
Well, what's up, Uncle Rob? Last year they were.
Exactly. So let's go to the game. The Titans, your team. Well, Jay Smooth.
No, Jay too. I was just waving at the camera.
Oh,
okay.
So you from Tennessee,
yeah, but
you
I was
for the Titans.
Not claiming the Titans. Believe me.
The Titans and the Chiefs, and of course, our man behind the glass did it again. Jay Smooth, he sent me a text and said he really appreciated it.
I didn't even do anything.
he jinxed the Kansas City Chiefs again. So, this is the question, though. Are we letting Andy Reid off the hook? Are we letting Andy Reid has gone down, is regarded as one of the best head coaches in football.
In football.
He had Donovan McNabb with the Eagles. You even mentioned Mike Vick.
Yeah, Vick a year with him.
Right?
Right.
We talked about him going to Kansas City, having a lead, and they losing the playoffs.
Right. And he's living off of a reputation of being a good regular season coach, basically, and getting his team he's got them far in the playoffs. They won a lot of NFC championships.
Right.
Well, got to NFC championships, only got to one Super Bowl.
Right.
But
four straight, to be exact.
Exactly. Four straight NFC title games.
Had T.O.
Donovan McNabb, yeah.
But it's always been a knock that he can't quite get that team over the hump. And we see it again. I mean, I think a lot of it this time is dealing with Alex Smith, who's more of a safe quarterback, who won't make that throw. He won't cut the ball loose in that time. He's, you know, that proverbial game manager.
Oh, you put that term in the dictionary. It's his picture beside it.
It's his picture beside it. Right?
So he's the Ben Simmons of...
Pretty much. He's not going to shoot the three. He's going to make sure he plays within this box.
What I do is what I do.
Right. And I think what happens is when other teams make adjustments, because we've seen it in the year, they started out the game on fire. Mm-hmm.
and they went right up and down the field. But what happened was Tennessee's defense, which is a real good defense now,
right,
they made the adjustments and made him have to hold the ball and put it in position to say, okay, if you beat us, make that throw that we know you're scared to make. So they took away the competent throws, the easy throws, and say, okay, if you're going to beat us, throw it down. And by that time, the defensive line was getting to him.
Yep.
And true enough, we talk about officiating all the time. They did get a bad break because Tennessee got away with a non-fumble call that Mariota, they said he had forward progress. But to me, that was a fumble. So, I mean, the officiating kind of started the ball going. They had a fluke play where Mariota threw a touchdown to himself, you know, I wish I'd have had some money on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good prop bet right there.
That's a good prop bet. So, I mean, things of that nature happen, but you have to be able to overcome it when you're supposedly the better team. And Kansas City was not able to do it. Now, they've had some injuries, like when they lost the safety, Eric Berry, early in the year, which kind of took their defense in a different way. I think they even lost a corner, and then they brought in Revis. Mm-hmm. You know, so they had some different things. I don't think Tamba Ali is what he was, but this question was about Andy Reid. No, he does not take the heat that he should take. And I think you do give him one more year with Mahomes, because now he'll have that quarterback who will throw the ball. He'll get it down the field. When you got Tyreek Hill, who has just that speed that takes your breath away, believe me, if Tyreek Hill gets deep, Patrick Mahomes will cut it loose.
Yeah,
he has that kind of arm talent, and he'll get out there. And with the other thing with Kareem Hunt, and then you got who I call Roll at the tight end, my man.
Oh, yeah, Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce. For those of you who watch Claws, you know who I'm talking about. Roller is off the chain. But he
got concussed early in that game.
He got concussed early. So having him next year with Mahomes, they'll have weapons. I think they got to retool the defense, but then it'll be on Andy Reid to see if he can get him to the next level.
Well, Andy Reid doesn't get enough flat because, like you say, Han did a great job there of breaking it all the way down, but he is a regular season coach. And I kind of put Andy Reid, because we got to give him credit. He's an offensive genius, all right? He's able to draw up plays and call plays and put people in the right positions. But I'm going to refer to something else, back to what we were just talking about. It's kind of like the Brian Daboll at Alabama with Jalen Hurts. With Alex Smith at quarterback, they're unable to open up the full playbook and run everything that they're comfortable with running because they know he's not going to take the chances.
Exactly.
They know he's not going to push it down the field. So they call conservative plays because they have a conservative quarterback. And like you say, with Patrick Mahomes, hopefully they're able to open it up and he's going to take the chances. And with those chances, it's going to come mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But to whom much is given, much is
expected.
So let's just give him one more year because we know what he can do offensively. We know he has the tools. He hadn't lost it. Andy Reid hadn't lost it. But can we give him the exact tools he needs in order to get it done? And let's see if Patrick Mahomes is there. And like you say, let's get Eric Berry back. Let's get Travis Kelce back, who was concussed early in that game. And I believe that changed the play calling for Kansas City also.
Because
being up 21-3.
Yeah.
You're supposed to put that game away.
Right. I was supposed to put it away. So does Alex Smith go to Jacksonville?
I don't think he goes to Jacksonville. I'm still leaning Manning on that, I think. Alex Smith could end up in Denver. Who knows? You know, he could end up in – there's a lot of places that need quarterbacks. We've seen it. So I'm sure he'll be somewhere in the NFL next year, but it won't be in Kansas City, I don't believe.
Did we say Denver?
Yeah.
We did say Denver.
Maybe Washington, but not if he's trying to get a championship.
Right.
That's just if he wants to play.
Yeah. All right. The Falcons, Rams, were you surprised? Shocked? They held the number one offense, 13 points. A lot of field goals from the Falcons, but the defense dominated. The biggest play was probably one of the, in my opinion, was the Sanu screen pass when he kind of took it for like 54 yards.
Go across the field.
Yeah, and great play calling from Sark. Matt made a great touchdown pass to Julio, finally getting the end zone. Julio numbers and Matt numbers in the playoffs are actually a whole lot better than they are in the regular season. So your thoughts on the Falcons game and what they actually did to the Rams?
Well, like you say, it was something that we have never seen before or expected, especially in the last two seasons when the Falcons have had success, is that the defense won the football game. We expect the Falcons to outscore people. All right, we expect them to go out there and put, last year when they put up over 30 points a game, and even with this year, we gave you the stats early. When they score over 20 points, they're undefeated. When they score under 20 points, they can't win. Right. So we expect the offense to carry the team. And with the defense being the ones that came out and were able to set the tone, carry the team, and like DW said earlier, shut down the most prolific scoring offense in the NFL this year, that's saying something. And that's a championship formula right there.
Gurley had less than 100 yards in three quarters.
Right.
And he kind of got some empty yards in it.
Exactly, when the game was already kind of put to bed. But that's what we did. That's what the Falcons didn't have last year.
Yep.
They were unable to close out a game without the offense being involved, the head of the snake. Okay? So now this year, the offense is still prolific. The weapons are still there. So if they just decide to wake up one day and turn into the offense that they actually are, and that defense still plays the way they do now, like I say, that's the championship formula right there.
And that was my point the whole time, was the experience that they were going to have going into the game, as you know, as opposed to what the Rams would have.
Right.
And I thought, like you said, take Gurley away and make Goff have to beat you. And I didn't think he would be able to do it. You know, you're looking at basically a rookie quarterback going against a Dan Quinn, who, like I said, this is what, 3 or 4 years? Was it 3 years that he went to the title game as a coach?
Three out of four.
So that's experience. Mm-hmm. To get through the playoffs, he knows what to expect. He should know how to prepare his team more. So when you have a team that's been there that knows how to prepare versus a team that's in there for the first time and not knowing, I mean, you can always say we're ready, but this is a different animal when you're in a playoff type atmosphere like that. And I just thought with Matt's experience and the team that they had, that they'd be able to come out on top. And basically that's what happened. I think they just really just did what they needed to do to win the football game.
Yeah. How much credit are we giving Manquan Manuel as the defensive coordinator this year?
I don't know if I still give it to DQ. I think DQ is pulling the strings on defense. I really do. I think maybe Marquand is, you know, he's probably got input or whatever, but I think Dan Quinn, to me, is still the defensive guy. And, I know he took over last year,
mm-hmm.
you know, and got them to the Super Bowl. And I still think that he's really the one that's putting the game plan in. And
he's built the defense like he did in Seattle.
Like in Seattle. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, I just, you want to give a brother some props, because he's the guy's going to take the heat if they don't win. If they blow coverages, it's mm-hmm. going to come on him.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of double-edged, but I still lean toward Dan.
And that's kind of with anything that you do, like kind of what I know we just got done talking about Kansas City, kind of like that. When you got an offensive coach, you know, if it goes good or bad, you're going to be like, if it goes good, you're going to be like, oh, that's the head coach.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? The head coach, he's the offensive genius. He's calling those plays.
And when it don't?
Exactly. So I believe we should give him a good bit of credit. You know, he deserves it because he has the title. But like you say, that's Dan Quinn's team. And when a team loses, wins or loses, only one name is going to be in that paper. That's the head coach.
ESPN is reporting that Nerv Turner is finalizing the deal to be the Panthers' offensive coordinator.
We were right.
Hey, I think he's going to help. He's a retread. Don't get me wrong. Retread, recycle, whatever you want to say. But he has that. He's come all the way from, I think, with Miami, with Jimmy Johnson, all the way to the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And had stints with other, you know, programs. I think he's been with the Chargers.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's the Chargers head coach.
Right,
yeah.
So he's been around.
San Diego Chargers.
Washington's head coach, too.
Right, but I don't think he's had a quarterback like Cam. That's the only thing that I would be a little leery of. You know, is he innovative enough to use what Cam does, you know?
Yeah.
Can he maximize those talents? So
We'll see.
We'll see.
Because he's been like Troy Aikman. If you want to talk about
somebody
who's been his most successful quarterback, let's talk. It's Aikman.
Yeah, that's true.
And Cam and Aikman are nothing alike.
Yeah, but if you can make Aikman a Hall of Famer, what you going to do with Cam?
And Aikman was an option quarterback.
But one thing Aikman had, he could turn around, hand it to 22, 25 times. And he could throw it to 88, whether somebody was on him or not.
Yep. Well, the problem in Carolina, they got to get it to 22.
They don't have two in the – not the 20. They don't even have a two.
But 22 for Carolina now should be good. He's going to help.
I think it'll help. All right, speaking of 22, let's talk – Panthers and Saints. Saints win 31-26. The Clay kid from Carolina dropped the touchdown. Let's just be real. Dropped the touchdown. And the Saints won this game in a traditional Drew Brees type way.
Yeah.
They really didn't run the ball with Kamara and Ingram. Drew Brees threw the ball just like we normally would see Drew Brees throw.
We had 345, something like that.
Exactly.
He had to throw it.
And he had to throw it. And this is somewhat of what we used to see with Drew Brees. Mm. But this year, it was more of Drew Brees getting in the car to ride the horses that they have, you know, in the backfield. So with that being said, New Orleans look well-balanced.
Well-balanced.
Going into this week's game and moving forward with Drew Brees showing that, hey, I still hadn't lost it.
But this is what we talked about. You remember, I think probably last year we talked about the elite quarterbacks. And, you know, folks were saying, well, he ain't elite. But I was always saying he might not be elite, but he very, 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 very good.
Very, very good.
So the thing about it is, yes, Kamara and your boy
Mark Ingram
have really taking this offense to a different level, you know, where Brees will get them the ball in space, whether that's a screen pass or some kind of little, you know, a lot more running of the football. I was to see Carolina shut their run game down. I mean, they clamped them.
Yeah, they did.
And that bodes well for the Falcons if they face them again, because you see now the run game can be stopped. But just watching Brees take this team and say, okay, you want to do that? That means you bring eight in the box. You got to be. If you stop at my run, that's going to lead one-on-one or whatever. And it backfired on him in the end. Well, I can't even say it backfired. Carolina had the ball.
They had a chance to win. Yeah.
You know, so, hey, it is what it is. And, you know, like, officiating took a little toll in that game also, to be honest with you. So, you know, I called Cam on the ground and called. That was kind of questionable. The interception was questionable. They didn't even review it. Mm-hmm. We've seen all year long where every catch has been, is that a catch or not?
Right.
They never even reviewed the interception.
Never even reviewed.
So, you know. But looking at it anyway, looking at New Orleans, you know, they look good, man. I mean, well-balanced, like you said.
All right, G, what's that?
One thing to consider here is, well, going back to the Kansas City real quick, the officiating was bad enough to where the referee retired.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He did. What's his name? Triplett?
Triplett. Yeah.
Wow.
Larry Triplett. But with this Saints-Panthers game, I think it was a strategic thing for Brees to throw as much as he did, for the simple fact that Carolina is third in the league against the run, third in the league, but 18th against the pass because of whoever they have in the secondary. I don't know any of their names, but they're middle of the pack at best against the pass. So the Saints took advantage of that, I think. And you have a guy who is willing, at least, to throw as many times as he did for much yard. So that's I think that's a main reason why it worked out for him.
Yep, I agree.
Yep.
Interesting that they play in Minnesota this week with a very, very good secondary. Xavier Rhodes got some good safeties, and they get to the quarterback, and they stop the run. So be kind of interesting to see how they would attack Minnesota in this case, because you got Everett Griffin coming off the end. They don't give up a lot of run, but at the same time, New Orleans defense has very, very much improved.
They have.
And you still got Case Keenum at quarterback. So this could be a game that could go either way.
Well, just to be honest, if you're in New Orleans, you go into a game like this and you know the Vikings take away the run. They're very good against it. But what do you do when when they come off the edge hard. You run right at them. All right. So what they have been doing all year, they need to continue to do. Just because Drew Brees had a stellar game last week, don't revert back to what the Saints used to be, because that would be a detriment for them. Because what's gotten them to this point and had them to win, to come out on top of the toughest division in football, for them to win that division, you know what that took? It took Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara running the ball down the throat. What they call them, thunder and lightning. All right. So you continue to do that. You continue to do that. And then once, then you adjust to whatever the game gives you, because we all know that Drew Brees is capable of beating any team in the NFL on any given Sunday. So go ahead and go in, do what you do, run the football. And if they take away the run, that's when you make your adjustments. And on the Vikings side, don't put the ball in Case Keenum's hand. Point blank, period. Right. Don't put the ball in his hands, and don't be surprised if the game gets out of hand if we see TB come in the game.
Mm. I agree.
So they're going to put it in Latavius Murray's hands?
Well, I'm just saying. Listen, McKinney, don't be.
It's got to be in somebody's hands.
Listen, they want to win this game.
Somebody
by defense.
Do something with the ball.
But don't. That's what I'm saying. Don't be surprised if you see if we don't see a Tua Tagovailoa. Halftime come in.
I feel you, and I understand that. When you look at this game, looking at it, Minnesota only gives up like 83 yards rushing. So,
second in the league.
Right. And number one overall as a defense. So when you look at that, you're saying that they're going to stop the run, and they're going to make Brees have to beat them passing the ball. Problem with that is now you got Xavier Rhodes, who's going to put him on Michael Thomas, and I don't think Xavier Rhodes is giving up much at all year long.
Nope.
So you're going to probably he's going to probably try to take him out of the game. And by the same token, on the other side, when you look at New Orleans, you have to some kind of way make Case Keenum beat you. Mm-hmm. And the one good thing about New Orleans is they have 35 takeaways on defense, which is I think. Maybe second or third, all leading the league in takeaways. They got 20 interceptions and 15 forced fumbles.
Right.
So their defense is very optimistic, and we'll see if that plays a part in it. So I think they're going to try to make Case Keenum beat them. But Thielen and Diggs have been awesome this year.
Yeah.
I think as a tandem, they led the league in receiving.
Mm-hmm. Thielen came out of nowhere.
Yeah, Thielen, yeah.
Well, so you can put Marshawn Lattimore on one of them.
On one of them.
And then you can – you know, shadow bracket the other, and then put the ball in.
Hell,
exactly. So we'll see what happens.
We're gonna see Teddy B. That's what's gonna happen.
What we're saying is kind of mirror images when you look at each other.
Yeah,
both
it
have
is.
A shut down corner.
Yeah, it is,
and they're gonna take mirror away image. The top receiver.
But I think the Vikings have better safeties,
and Vikings have the better quarterback. I mean, I'm
y'all just gonna say
New Orleans has the better quarterback,
and that's what I was just about to say. Y'all said they mirror images. What is the one thing?
Yeah. All right, so I'd be remiss without asking Hancock this, and I know we talked about it earlier, and we go kind of turn the page a little bit. Russell Westbrook was quoted as saying that he doesn't have to sell a pitch to Paul George to stay in OKC, that winning the championship
is his
sales pitch.
Yeah, he need to go get some advertising people.
He ain't pitching nothing to Paul George, then.
I'm just saying, that pitch is not working, and it's not going to work. They're not going to win a championship. I watched them play again last night, and they lost to Portland without Damon Lillard.
Right.
And when you watch them play, it's one-on-one. It's rec ball.
Your turn, my turn.
Your turn, my turn, and Melo spotting up. And that's just not conducive to getting a crucial basket. They're winning on talent. And you just I don't think that's going to get them far in the playoffs, man.
It's not.
It's just not going to happen. And it's good to put a lot of star people together, but if they don't mesh and don't play well together, it's not going to work. Honestly, I think they need to move Paul George now.
Of course.
Because if they don't, they're not going to get anything for him. They're going to end up just like the Hawks.
He's going
losing people without getting anything in return for him. You know, because he's a free agent. He can sign any way he wants to.
And y'all know where I'm going with this. You know where I'm going with this. I believe the personnel is fine. If you look at them on paper, they look beautiful. It's one constant that's giving them an issue.
The coach.
It's Billy Donovan.
What is he going to do if everybody's the same type of player?
Listen, everybody can be the same type of player, Han. When you got talent of that caliber, If you're able to put them in situations that they're able to be successful instead of your turn, my turn, put them in a system. What system? Tell me what system Billy Donovan runs.
I don't know, but he got
Thank you, Florida. That's the issue
there. He got
there is no system.
There is no system. That's the issue.
But you had Kevin Durant,
but,
it didn't work.
But look, okay.
Had Kevin Durant and it didn't work.
But if they all had report cards and coming home for every 6 weeks, right? Russell Westbrook's does not play well with others.
Yeah.
Okay, that would be the first thing under him. Melo would be he's a loner, plays by himself, pouts.
Yeah, pouty.
And Paul George, I want to get along with everybody.
Yeah, yeah, he's a get-along guy.
So what I'm saying is that, you know, all their report cards would be jacked up.
Yeah, true, facts. But listen, who would you, if your kid brought that report card home, who you going to call up to see what's going on? You going to call their teacher.
Yeah,
so, I guess so. Who you going to call? You got to call Billy Donovan. He has to be able to take those personalities and put them in situations to be successful. You mean to tell me if Greg Popovich had this personnel, he wouldn't have four or five championships?
Yeah, I guess if you can coach Steven Jackson and win a championship, you
thank
win.
You very much.
And but, Bruce Bowen.
But they had a system. Thank you very much. Right, true.
It's
true.
The system.
But you had a stable person in Tim Duncan who you knew Tim was going to get the ball first.
But also you consider with Popovich that he adjusted – he adjusted according to his personnel. Yeah, he had Tim Duncan all that time, but it was at when they were winning the first couple of championships, it was this slow down offense.
He was able to adjust.
And they played on defense. Hey, and Billy then later Donovan, on, Billy it was Donovan a lot sucks. Of ball movement.
Let's keep it
100.
Yeah. Hey, this on the SRT show, we keep it 1,000. Right. Right. Billy Donovan sucks.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't think Billy Donovan go win in this one. But before we go, and I know we got to get up out of here. But
it's time to go.
Yeah. Yes, but I got to ask this question. Somebody asked me this question, and they threw it out there for me. So I said I was going to ask it on the show. So I said, let me throw it out to my folks and see what they say. If you're the Atlanta Hawks, you have a chance to draft Marvin Bagley, could be a 10-time All-Star, or Trae Young, who is...
Man, that's not even a question.
Comparable.
It's not even a question.
To a Steph Curry. Steph Curry, a lot of teams missed on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams regret it.
Right.
And even when they did draft him, they had already given Monte Ellis a whole lot of money.
Right.
They drafted him anyway. Who would you take?
I'm taking Marvin Bagley, and it's not even a question because Steph Curry was the perfect storm. He hit the right system. Okay, I know I keep saying that, but in basketball, that's what it is a lot of. It's a lot about where you go and who you play with and what system you play in. And Marvin Bagley could fit into anybody's. He can plug in anywhere. We had this conversation in our text stream. Trae Young is small. Steph Curry's 6'3", all right? He's not as small, all right? I understand he's real thin and blah, 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 but Trae Young is no bigger than 5'11", 6 feet. In heels, all right? So I understand he has great ability, but how would it translate to the next level? It's great in college, but we see Marvin Bagley, it translates across basketball.
Yeah.
End of story?
Hey, I'd have to take Bagley. I would have to take Bagley, no doubt about it. I don't know if I'm not going to say it's not close because of the way the game is now in the league.
Right.
But I would have to take Bagley because I think he does more than just what a big does.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. If he was just traditional big, it would be different.
If he was a Carl Anthony Towns, yeah, then it's more of a debate.
More of a debate. But yeah. I think Bagley is legit.
Yeah.
He's legit. So, I mean, but like I said, I was told I was prisoner of the moment when I saw Steph 5 years ago.
Right.
But here's the thing.
I'm glad I was prisoner.
If Steph goes to Chicago, is he still Steph? You feel what I'm saying?
That's a whole nother debate. Yeah. We're going to have to talk about it next week. Folks, we got to get up out of here, man. Thanks for all of the Facebook onlookers, man, to our new situation over here. So
appreciate y'all going
to the SRT page. Shout out to all of the folks on Facebook Live. Shout out to the crew. Thanks for coming through, doing your thing. Shout out to DW for coming in. Well, not coming in, but they actually called in to do the Falcon Report. So rise up on that. And thanks for all of y'all to continue to support SRT and Sports Roundtable.
Same thing he said. Appreciate you, Uncle Rob, and everybody checking in from Memphis. Love y'all.
Thank you for everyone for checking it out. Shout out to my mom and dad.
Hey, shout out to the wife and shout out to the Facebook Live crew, man. We appreciate y'all. Roll Tide!
Yes, sir. Please continue to support and go to SRT Sports Talk Radio. And like I said, if you don't like it, you better learn to love it because it's the best thing going today. Hand, let's roll.
Boogie, I'm headed home, baby.
They call me Coach because I teach you how to ball.
It's your main man, H.O. from Bankhead. R.I.P. Mom, R.I.P. B.C. And if you love the show,
tell a friend.
And if you didn't,
dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly.
Peace.